Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Grandparenting. Something seems to happen to grandparents when the little ones come along. When it happened to CBS and 60 Minutes correspondent Leslie Stahl, it awakened unbounded joy and affection, but she wanted to know more. She's written about it in her new book, Becoming Grandma, but she does more than gush, as the subtitle, The Joys and Science of New Grandparenting, suggests. True to her profession, she dug deeper to find out why she and other grandparents react as they do. Leslie Stahl joins me to tell us what she found out. Leslie, so nice to have you with us.
Oh, it's wonderful to be with you, Don, and everybody in St. Louis.
We're looking forward to your being here on Sunday. We'll tell folks about that in a couple of minutes. But I want to start by just saying that if anybody would doubt about how you feel about being a grandmother, all they have to do is look at the cover of your book and see the smile on your face with two little girls on your lap. It's a radiant, radiant, happy smile.
You know, I think, honestly, in my whole life, I have not been this happy, really. There's such a depth of emotion that comes over us grandmothers, and it's a feeling unlike any other ever in your whole life. It's total, it's unconditional, it's unfettered, and it's purely wonderful.
Was it something that you anticipated when you learned that you were going to be a grandmother?
I don't want to say I always wanted to be a grandmother, but since I was 45 years old and my kid was just 10, I wanted to be a grandmother. I don't know why. Eventually, I think most women get there, but they're usually older. But I was young. And I think the reason that we do want to be grandparents is because grandmothers are meant to babysit. And I mean that. We were... In the old days, by that I mean caveman days, all the way up through really the middle of the last century, grandmothers took care of the babies. That was our role. That's why we're here on the planet. That's why we live so long. And when we don't get that, we actually physically crave it. That's my theory.
Well, that's one of the things that makes your book so interesting, is because you go into things like that. I mean, who knew? Who would have known that that grandmothers were put on the planet for that very specific reason?
Well, you know, most animals, with the exception of humans, whales, and elephants, do not live past the time when they can when they stop reproducing. So there's no such thing as menopause with other animals. They just die when they can't have babies anymore. So anthropologists have wondered why do we live longer? And they have come up with this theory that we live longer to take care of our grandchildren so that both parents can go out and hunt and grow crops and know that their babies are being well cared for. So we're really here for that reason, no matter what else we're doing in life.
You know, one of the other things that you point out early on in the book, and again, it's most instructive for people like myself, you go into what happens. Something does happen chemically and hormonally to grandparents, to grandmothers in particular.
Well, I interviewed biochemists who have written for a long time that when a baby is born, the mother... will have her brain actually rewired, and quite dramatically. And she starts secreting hormones that bind her to her child so that she actually becomes addicted to her child. And I began to wonder if something like that wasn't happening to me as a grandmother. And I found out, yes, we too have our brains rewired when we hold those babies. And we too secrete a bonding chemical in our bodies, so that this gigantic feeling, emotion that we feel, that I felt and couldn't understand, is a real bodily, physical change going on. It's real.
You describe it as being the same thing as falling deeply in love.
Yeah, you know what? This is really fascinating. At least I thought it was that. That circuitry, that the way your wires are constructed, when you hold your grandchild, that circuitry is exactly the same as the circuitry when you fall in love, when you have romantic love. And so it is not an accident that we do use the same words that for falling in love and holding your grandchild, because we are experiencing something somewhat similar, just in the depth of it and the craving part of it. When you really fall in love with someone, you do have that kind of sense that I have to see them. I have to see them. Well, that happens with a grandchild. Same thing.
Now, we
amazing,
can't,
huh?
Yeah, absolutely. We can't leave the grandfathers out of this. What's going on hormonally with them, if anything?
Well, they are having their own kind of hormones. It's not exactly the same. And when I asked grandfathers, when I interviewed them, and I asked them if the first time they held a grandchild, they had that huge, gigantic rush, which grandmothers get, they said no. But they do get attached, and they do have bodily changes as well, different hormones, different kinds of hormones. But they become deeply attached in a way that makes everything in their body soften. You know, grandparents and grandfathers, they get a kind of giddy look on their faces. You know, you have these big CEOs, these guys who ran big companies. You have football coaches. You have the toughest of the tough. You have soldiers, and they pick up their grandchild, and they turn to mush. And they even when I interviewed these kinds of people, I interviewed the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey. And when I asked him about his grandchildren, his eyes softened, his mouth softened. He went almost limp just telling me about them. He told me that when one of his grandchildren was born, his knees almost buckled. I know it.
Well, there's another aspect of this that you cover in the book, and I'll bring that up now. Your late colleague Bob Simon and your husband, who suffers from Parkinson's disease, said there's a curative aspect to grandchildren.
Well, particularly with depression, because I saw it with Bob. Bob was in a depression for a couple of years, and then his grandson Jack was born, or as he put it to me, but when I had Jack, you know, he had Jack, his depression just, it vanished, it evaporated. With my husband, when our first grandchild was born, the Parkinson's symptoms went away. I will tell you, Don, that they did come back with him, so it wasn't a cure, but it is therapeutic. It also, there are studies that say it can fend off dementia, taking care of a grandchild. And I say at the end of the book that I call it a call to arms, that grandparents should, if they're already involved with their grandchildren, they should get more involved. And if they're not involved, they should get involved, because our grandchildren need us. We enrich their lives. Our children who are struggling to make enough money for childcare need us, need our help. And we are perhaps the biggest beneficiaries.
In the context of that particular chapter, the final chapter, you really bring up an issue that is very sad, and that is there are cases, of course, in which parents might not want one set of grandparents or the other or both to be a part of their lives.
I know. And this is a tragedy. It really, for all involved, there are couples who deny access to the grandparents. In other words, grandparents cannot see their own grandchildren. And you would be surprised how prevalent that is. I was surprised at how many grandparents I met in the course of my, I call it a grand tour, right? Went around to interview grandparents. How many times I heard this? If not denied total access, then at least rationed. And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. The grandparents have no idea what they did to deserve such a terrible punishment.
It can be like divorce, where sometimes kids are used as a weapon, as a tactic, if you will.
a tactic. Sometimes, you know, they resent something their parents did, and it's a payback. Sometimes they say to themselves, the parents, you know, I don't want to subject my children to what my parents did to me. Okay, that's fair. But they should understand that when we grandparent, it is 180 degrees different from how we parented, because we are indulgent as grandparents. All we do is love them. We love them. We're not going to be critical of them. We're going to be non-judgmental. And it isn't that we set out to be that way. It's automatic. It's as if you're a grandparent and some switch is flicked. And all you do is just love them. It's really something. I had it, and I thought, well, I must be unique, but I'm hardly unique. It's universal.
Well, let's turn this around just a little bit for a moment and talk about the impact of the grandparents on the kids. I wonder what's going on there.
Well, a couple of things. If someone loves you that unconditionally, children need that. They know that they are having someone who looks upon them in a way that they are the sun, the moon, without criticism. You know, their parents are always on their case. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't eat this. Don't. And here, along come grandparents who just their whole idea is whatever you want. The answer is yes, and you're perfect. And if you draw a funny line on a piece of paper, you're artistic. And if you put your shoes on the right feet, you're a genius. You know, and children know that they're adored, and they adore back. They adore you back. It's just a wonderful thing, and children are enriched by that. They also, and this is very important for all of us, they get a sense of family. They get a sense of roots. They get a sense that they belong to something larger than their little nuclear family. And that's important, to get a sense of tradition and a sense of belonging to a large number of people, you know, your cousins. But grandparents provide that for them. And grandfathers. Grandfathers are supposed to tell their children stories about, you know, the history of the family. Children want to know about that, and it's apparently very healthy for them.
One of the things you say in the book, which says very clearly what you've just been saying here, is that grandparents tend to be playmates with the kids rather than the policemen that their parents were.
Yeah, they are. And we don't set out to be. You know, our children say sometimes, who are you? You're nothing like you were when you were my mother. Who the heck are you? And we are just as surprised at ourselves as they are. We look at ourselves and say, who are you? It's amazing. The transformation is amazing.
You also say in the book that I found interesting that there are no role models for grandmothers in the 21st century. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, you know, we are the baby boomers.
Yeah.
Before I answer that question, the baby boomer generation are now 50 to 70. So we are the grandparents. Listen to this. There are 30,000 new grandparents in the United States every week. Can you say that? Every week, 30,000 new grandparents. By the vast number are baby boomers. Baby boomers are a generation unto themselves. They have determined the country's values, their culture, their mores, our looks. And one of the important things to baby boomers is that we remain young. So even though chronologically we may not be young grandparents, we're younger in our outlook, we're younger in our health, we're healthier, and we this is another amazing thing. We're the richest generation. Our children are not doing as well as we did when we were that age. So we are providing a lot of financial support for our children and grandchildren, more than past generations. In fact, another statistic that grandparents today are spending seven times more on grandchildren than just 10 years ago.
Wow.
I know. So we're involved. We're deeply involved in their lives in many different ways. And because so many of grandmothers worked and are still working, because, you know, a lot of grandmothers are pre-retirement age, that we're different in all different ways. A lot of us are finding that I'm back to that balancing, life balancing act again. I'm juggling again because I'm working and I want to see those grandchildren. I want them in my life. And the other thing is technology has changed the relationship enormously, because I live on the other coast. My grandchildren live in Los Angeles. But because of Skyping and FaceTime, I can see them, talk to them, be in their lives every day, even though I don't live anywhere near them. And that's changed for grandparents who don't live nearby.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that because that's such a key. I can't tell you how many grandparents I've met that have learned social media and learned how to use a computer simply because they want to exchange pictures of the grandkids and send email to the older ones.
Exactly. It's kind of amusing. And they say that people my age don't know anything about technology, but boy, do we learn when we have grandchildren. And here's the other interesting thing that I learned from Facebook, that grandchildren are more likely to like their grandparents than their own parents. Isn't that interesting?
That's because they're playmates and not policemen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We're flying blind a little bit as grandparents, particularly grandmothers are, and grandfathers too, because this generation of grandfathers were more involved parents. They spent more time with their kids than grandfathers before our generation. You know, they were going to the soccer games more often. They were coaching the teams more often. They were helping around the house, so they were there more often. And, you know, they're the grandfathers who were saying, listen, I have to take off today. I have to take my kid to the doctor, more than parents in the past. So these grandfathers were more involved fathers. So it feels more natural for them to become grandfather nannies. You know, they're right. Actually taking care of the kids.
As I mentioned to you off the air, and I won't go into details, I've got a situation like that in my own family. It's quite remarkable to watch that.
You should tell that story, because that's not atypical. I mean, you don't have to name names, but tell what you told me.
It's a brother-in-law who's retired who travels 40 miles each way every day to babysit three little girls. His granddaughters. He raised three boys, rough and tumble household. He's just totally gaga over these kids. And I mean, it's 80 miles a day.
And you know, it's not that uncommon.
Well, adorable. You helped me in your book to understand what this guy's going through. I thought he maybe just wanted to get out of the house, but it's more to it than that.
It's much more than, yeah. You might also want to get out of the house, Don.
Yeah, that's true. You know, there's some other dynamics at work here that that you address in the book. They're very, very interesting. One are mothers-in-law, and the other are the other grandparents. And there can be a dynamic here, kind of a jealousy thing, or why don't you explain what goes on? And you have some words of caution for the mothers-in-law, for instance.
Right. Well, they're kind of two different things. On the mother-in-law situation, there is kind of a built-in, long-time universal tension that exists between mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law. It's ancient. It goes way back. And, you know, everybody, all the ancients wrote about it. And it persists today in India. That's what all their soap operas are about, this horrible tension between those two women who, in a funny way, are vying over the son, the prince, you know, mm-hmm. the husband and the son. And mothers-in-law who want to be involved in their grandchildren's lives, I have to be very careful. They have to bite their tongue. They can't antagonize. We know this. We feel it ourselves. We are terrified that we are going to irk them so much that they will, as we were talking about before, deny us time with our grandchildren. So grandmothers get together and we joke about it, but it's true that we can't say a word. We can't raise an eyebrow. We have to say, aren't you the most wonderful mother all the time, even though we may not believe it. But we know we have to be careful. And we are. We're all like that, just to have the children. And then the other thing you brought up was the other grandparents.
Right.
And there is also something kind of built in. There's kind of a natural competition. And you don't want to be like that. I didn't want it to be like that. None of us do, but there it is, you know, it's there. Do the children prefer them? Are they seeing them more? That kind of thing. And even if you like the other grandparents, it's just there. And I had some grandmothers be very honest with me about it, as long as I didn't use their real name.
You gotta
put my name in there, but
you got to keep in mind that those chemicals and hormones are working for the other grandparents as well.
Oh, yeah, and you know the truth is, the more people who love your grandchild, the better it is for the grandchild.
Sure,
having people love you is going to give you strength and confidence, and it's an important part of being a human being. So, it's wonderful, but still it's there. You know, it just creeps in. You can't help it.
As our time begins to wind down, I did want to mention one other part of your book that I found to be very emotional. And that is the, and I've just lost the name of the chapter 6 it is. It's the place where people are surrogate grandparents to kids who have been abused.
Oh, it's called Hope Meadow.
Hope Meadow, yes, exactly.
Oh, my word. It was the most astonishing place. Where foster children are being adopted by young parents and sprinkled within this community where they're all living together are senior citizens who are living there because the housing is subsidized. And they become quite naturally and organically surrogate grandparents. They don't have to, but it happens. And they become... If they were depressed, it lifts, just what we were talking about before. They're younger because they're involved with the children. The children, these foster children, can talk to these grandparents in a way they can't talk to anybody else. Because, once again, we're non-judgmental. And this is a community of troubled children. They're foster children who were shunted from one house to another. A lot of them had been abused. And everybody's thriving in this place. It is such a successful community that it is being reproduced around the country now.
We, in fact, are going to be talking about foster grandparenting in the segment following your departure, which has to be very soon because our time is up, Leslie Stahl. It's been a great joy to talk to you. And you know, I just so heartily recommend this book for grandparents or non-grandparents. It's, there's a lot of very good information in it. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. And I'm coming to St. Louis.
Just going to mention that.
People will come around and say hi.
You'll be there. You'll be here on Sunday. You're going to talk about becoming grandma. Sunday, 1:30 at St. Luke's Hospital Institute for Health Education on South Woods Mill Road in Chesterfield. Look forward
thank
to that.
You.
Leslie Stahl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.